Welcome to Mixtape Music Class. In this virtual classroom, I have a one-on-one conversation with my students. I select 5 songs for them, they select 5 songs for me. Hi everybody, and welcome to this week's episode. Today I talk with Mr. Greg Mazurek, who is a music educator in the Conrad Weiser School District. And we both know each other because our wives work together, and we're also both Millersville grads. We're both big music nerds, so we had a lot to say, so the conversation went on for a while. So I'm splitting it up into 2 episodes. Today is part 1 of that conversation, and next week we'll continue with part 2. So without further ado, here is part 1 of our conversation. Hey, Mr. Mazurek, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you for having me, Mr. Innes. I am beyond excited to be here.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a good conversation. I think a lot of our musical tastes overlap a little bit, and it's going to be a Radiohead-heavy podcast.
Yeah. No, I was realizing that when you sent me the list, and I was like, ooh, I know some of these, and I didn't know some of the other ones, so it was pretty exciting.
Good,
across the board.
Well, why don't you introduce yourself to listeners who may not know you and just talk us through your musical journey and how you got to where you are and what you're currently up to.
Sure. So I'm Mr. Mazurek. I am, entering my 18th year of being employed by the Conrad Weiser Area School District, not too far from where you find yourself. I am not originally from this area. I grew up in New Jersey. I found my way here through Millersville, which is where we began to meet acquaintances, and I studied music education. I was a voice major, terrible piano player. Anybody who knows me can testify to that. But I was a voice major, graduated and taught for 12 years, middle school general music at Conrad Weiser, did 5 through 8 general chorus, and then did a year, a little bit of time up in the high school where I did some guitar class and high school chorus. I've been the vocal director for the musicals up there at the Weiser High School my entire tenure at Weiser. And so about 6 years ago, I switched over, and I'm now primarily a tech coach. They call me I'm the hybrid learning coach in my school district, but I still have close ties with the music department. I'll help out. Basically, if somebody's sick and there's a rehearsal and I can be available, I'll try to help and cover rehearsals and do whatever I can to help some folks as I can, as it's my first love. And I've done musicals, I've played in bands, not rock bands, unfortunately. I do bands at church. Doing virtual VBS right now, so I've been playing the guitar, and I found out how out of practice I am, as my hand cramps every time I play certain chords. I've been active in music for a very long time. Musical tastes have certainly changed over the years. It's gone from, first CD. Do you remember the first CD you ever bought?
Not really. I almost want to say it was like Mariah Carey or something like that.
Yeah, I got you. I can beat you. My first 2 CDs I ever purchased, CDs. So I've been around since cassette tapes.
Okay? Right. Oh, yeah. I had cassettes. Yeah.
Yeah. But the first 2 I ever remember spending my own money on were Janet Jackson, Rhythm Nation. Mm-hmm. And Young MC, Stone Cold Ryman. I still have that one. I've long since lost the Janet Jackson one, but I still have the Young MC. That's the one with Bust a Move on it.
Okay,
I honestly can't tell you if he ever put out another album, but I know he put out that one.
Right.
And, just listening to stuff forever. And it's interesting for me. When I was in the classroom, I used to do a project, not quite like this, but we used to do Desert Island Discs. So choose 5 albums.
Yeah.
And it's interesting for me to see over the years how that's changed and shifted, and how different that list is today from when I was in my 30s and my 20s and my teens. Do you know what I mean? Certain things, I think the core, I think I've just gotten better at refining what it is I like.
Yeah.
If that makes more sense.
No, I agree. I think I read somewhere where I think when you're 14 is when you really lock in your musical preferences. And that's when you kind of, and I think from there, like you said, you refine it, but I think you kind of
I would probably be about right. So 14 for me. I'm older than you.
Yeah.
So we both went to Millersville.
Right.
But you're a class or so behind me, if my math is correct. We have become friends more so because our wives work with each other.
That's
and
correct.
We gather at things like that. And when the wives get together and the families get together, we have found that we have a very similar taste in music and a lot of other things and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But 14 would have been, for me, would have been what, ninth grade?
Yeah, that's usually right about the beginning of high school, I think.
Yeah. So that was 92 for me. So like that was right when grunge hit. Like I remember.
Oh, yeah.
Going away to, I was lucky enough to travel, and I traveled to England in my freshman year, and I left listening to the Spin Doctors, and I came back to everybody listening to Pearl Jam. Like, I was gone for 10 days, and it was just, it seemingly happened like that. Now, I've learned long since then, it didn't happen just like that, but man, everybody in my school went from listening to, like, hair metal to everybody found a flannel. And it was hardcore grunge. And to this day, if I'm on longer trips, like I looked at my car the other day, like I still have Pearl Jam's 10 in my car. Because
classic.
At the time, I was a Pearl Jam guy versus a Nirvana guy. I've come to love Nirvana.
Yeah.
Especially their Unplugged, which I think is as fine a recording as I own.
Yeah.
But no, it was Pearl Jam. And then that was really kind of where a lot of those things, and then kind of refined in those early years of college.
Right.
Did the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been a fun journey. And look, nowadays we can listen to music, anything.
I know.
It's so easy to get at this point in time.
Yeah. I've had that conversation so many times and it's come up on the podcast as well. The difference between getting the album in our day and you get the whole thing, you listen all the way through, you like one song and you buy the album hoping the rest is good. Versus today, where you could just cherry pick what you like and pick a song at a time.
Yeah, and I find that I've actually, it's worked for me both ways, where I've actually found one song that I liked, and I went back and found the album and listened to the whole thing, and then the other times where I just listened to that one song. In fact, I have the list that I sent you.
Yeah.
I have other songs receiving votes, like a whole nother list of the first draft.
Yeah.
There was a couple of those in there where I kind of went and found them, you know, like entire albums that I loved because of one song.
Right.
You know, but yeah, music, it's been different. And especially with streaming stuff and the increased ability for Bluetooth to not be terrible.
Yeah.
You know, people are just have headphones in all the time.
Right.
And listening to stuff all the time. Although, also, as I've progressed in my aging, I have listened to far more podcasts and audiobooks, I think, than I ever thought I really would.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting where technology has brought us and just everything at our fingertips. I mean, even in the past 5 years, the changes that have been made.
Yeah. Although, I'll tell you, the thing that I've purchased more than anything in the last 5 years has been vinyl.
Myself included.
I've gotten into collecting. Not a ton. I'm not searching for a lot of stuff, but there's been a record show in Lancaster that I've been to a couple of times, and there's a couple of record stores around. And I when I go to purchase something, I've actually very much enjoyed the bands where if you buy the vinyl, you get the code
download card. Yeah, me too.
That's been great. Yeah.
Yep. In fact, before I came on to go on Zoom with you, I was just listening to vinyl downstairs. So.
What were you listening to?
I was listening to, first I was listening to the new Lettuce album, and I just got it the other day on vinyl. It's called Resonate. Mm-hmm. And then right after that, I was listening to a D'Angelo remixes of his Voodoo stuff. So,
okay.
Yeah, vinyl is, it just feels more present. You know, you have to work at it. You have to get up and switch sides and put the needle down, and you physically have in your hand, you have this big piece of cover art, and you know, and of course all some of the scientific mumbo jumbo where people are like, it's warmer, it's a fuller sound, and you know, we could talk about that all day too.
We could. The only textbook I ever sold back from Millersville, though, was my musical acoustics textbook. That class, and I didn't agree. I found that. So for me, what do I have upstairs? I just picked up some stuff, and I think it was I got Springsteen's "Darkness at the Edge of Town," "The Wild, the Innocent, and the East Street Shuffle," and a couple of soundtracks. I got like Star Trek and Star Wars and Superman because they were all there, and I was like, oh my gosh. And I have a record player at school, and I have a record player at home. And I actually like the record player at school because A, the kids are always like, what's that? And B, it forces me about every 25 minutes to get up and walk away from just being stuck at my computer, being in tech all the time. I spend a lot of time looking at a computer, so having the vinyl kind of also makes me get up and stretch my legs. And I've also been the repository for everybody's vinyl. You know, as the family's cleaning out their stuff, they're like, oh, well, you'd like this. I'm like, sure. So I have like records by bands that I'm not a huge fan of, but I'm like, well, I'll listen to everything. So.
I've become the same. I got, I don't know, all sorts of old stuff that I'm never gonna listen to, Engelbert Humperdinck and stuff
Yes. Yes. Who, by the way, has one of the coolest names of all time. I could not tell you the music, but I think I definitely have an Engelbert Humperdinck. I've got a Judy Collins album. A Carpenters. I'm pretty sure I got a Carpenters thing in there somewhere, but that was what my parents liked. And
I mean, I
one of.
pulled out some of the gems. I got some, Simon and Garfunkel out of it, maybe
Yes.
a Neil Diamond, and I think there's a Willie Nelson in there, and
I will say that my sister, who's a little younger than I am, got into vinyl. I call my sister a proto-hipster. She's been involved in a lifestyle that just she loves old stuff. She collects eclectic things. She's just an awesome soul. And when she went up to college, she took a lot of like my parents, some of the stuff that they had that we both kind of liked. But I got a lot of the other stuff. So like and like random things that I looked at my mom the one time and was like, you like the Doors? Like, I didn't know you liked the Doors. And I got a pristine copy of Morrison Hotel and just some stuff where I was like, weird. But and along with that, there's the Ballad of the Green Berets and other things that have just, randomly appeared in collections. But it's fine because one of the things that I learned in my musical journey is that you got to listen to everything because how do you know if you don't like it? Like, I can't tell you if I like or dislike something without actually listening to it. And I laugh when people are like, I love all music except country. Or I love all music except this. And it's like, well, how do you know? Because it's some of it's brilliant. And I don't always agree with what people are saying on some of their recordings, but man, I can appreciate how they say it.
Absolutely. I think I've always said I can always find something in every genre that I can appreciate or listen to. I don't really like country, but I think I could find a couple artists who I would not mind listening to. Same thing
I think,
with, heavy metal or I don't know. Everything, there's somebody I could find.
I find myself with country music. There's certain spots in the genre that I do like. I love a lot of the old country, like the early Johnny Cash stuff. Listening to one of the records I'm trying to find is Folsom Prison. I have a copy of Live at San Quentin. I want the Folsom Prison one, and I want an original one. I have a reproduction, a reprint of San Quentin. But like that to me, and the reason that I do like some country music, and I like the Garth Brooks, George Strait, that 90s, 2000 country pop kind of stuff I really enjoy. Because I have found that what I really like about music, and as I've been refining my taste, is I love music that tells a story. And I think that country music does that really well. But I do think that it can be repetitive, but there's nothing wrong with that. So I like a lot of that stuff that really helps tell a story. And one of the songs that I, one of the reasons one of the I sent you one of the songs is I like that, like as I feel that they're brilliant storytellers in what they do. So yeah, I just man, I'll listen to just about anything. Throw it to me and I'll listen to it. And if I like it, great. If I don't, great. But you do. So don't. That's one of those Dave Grohl quotes, which you can't use in school. But basically, this the to PG it. It just like what you like. There's no such thing as a guilty pleasure. Just embrace it,
Right.
say that you like it, and enjoy it. You know, I like Billie Eilish. I love the Harry Styles album, the new one. It's really good.
Yeah, and I think that's part of this whole podcast project that I'm doing here is to maybe get an idea of what other people like and get some suggestions like, oh, I really like this. This is cool. I think you would like it too. And you know, I've on one of the episodes I listened to a Harry Styles song, and you know, I probably wouldn't have listened to Harry Styles otherwise, but I listened to it. I'm like, you know, this isn't too bad.
There's something about the new track he has out, that Adore You one. That was, by the way, on my Others Receiving Votes.
Yeah.
That was the last cut before I sent you the list. It's because to me it you can very easily tell his influences. And it has a huge Peter Gabriel feel to me,
Okay,
and
yeah.
I do love Peter Gabriel. So like, hearing that, and then hearing the song, and then I've heard a couple of live versions of it. And I know I don't have to sell you on this topic, but to me, I love hearing live versions of songs
Oh, yeah.
because you can mask so many things in the studio that you can't hide when you're live.
Yeah,
And
absolutely.
I think that hearing, I heard him do some stuff on a random. Like Howard Stern recordings of him doing this wonderful cover of Sledgehammer, and then
Yeah.
he did the version of Adore You, and I was like, that's really good.
Yeah.
Like, not just, oh, that's a catchy pop tune, but like, there's something about the song that I find, like, anytime it comes on the radio, I'm like, crank it up. And my kids are like, seriously? I'm like, shush you, turn it back down when something else comes on. But
Yeah.
yeah, I just, you know, there's so much good music out there that it's exciting to listen to and hear.
Yeah. Well, let's start talking about our picks, and
All right.
we'll get into the nitty-gritty here. So we're going to start with your first pick, and I knew
Okay.
this was coming. I mean, not the specific song, but I knew you were going to share some Avett Brothers. So this is Murder in the City by the Avett Brothers, and you specifically picked a live version.
Yes. So I got into the Avett Brothers just like randomly. Like, they came up on something, and it was like one of those things that you kind of like, and I started to listen to it and started to listen to it. And then I listened to this specific live album, and I just got hooked. There's something about the genuine nature in which they perform,
Yeah.
that I loved. And this song in particular is just, it's just one of my favorites.
Yeah, it's stripped down and simple, and you know, I think like you said, it tells a story. And I'm not a big lyrics guy, and that's come up in some of these podcasts where a lot of times it takes me a few listens till I really start paying attention to the lyrics, but certainly in this one the lyrics grabbed me right away. And I almost wondered how like autobiographical it was.
Well, the interesting thing about this is if you go back and listen to the original version, the lyrics are different.
Okay.
You know, it starts off with, like, if I get murdered in the city, don't go revenging in my name. And he goes through this whole thing, and it's just basically this letter from a father to his family that if, you know, he's going into the big city. And like, what if he doesn't come back? In the original version, in I think the third verse, it's the lines that I love the most. In the version that's on the playlist, it says, "Make sure my wife knows I love her. Make sure my daughter knows the same. And
Yeah, I.
always that always remember, there's nothing worth sharing like the love that lets us share our name." And I'm blown away by that line. Like,
Yeah.
it's so brilliant in its simplicity. And what it is, but the original version says, "Make sure my mom knows I love her, and make sure my sister knows the same," because at that point in
Huh.
time, he wasn't married and had no kids.
Interesting.
If you
Yeah.
listen to a more mod, if you listen to like, if you go on YouTube and find a concert, he says, "Make sure my wife knows I love her. Make sure my kids know the same," because he has more than one kid now.
Oh, okay.
So like, and there's a part of me that appreciates that he always is going back and revising that thing, because this is what that connection for him is. And
Right.
I just, it's such a brilliant, it's so simple in what he's saying, but, and when you look at the title of the song, you go, "Murder in the City, what am I about to listen to?" And
Yeah.
then you listen to it and you go, there's a banjo and a guitar, and I don't really, what?
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah, no, I made specific note of that lyric in my notes as I was listening, and it came up, and yeah, it was definitely moving to me. And I think as you become a parent, I think maybe it means even more mm-hmm. to you. And I think it probably changed the meaning for him as well.
Yeah, I would think so. And it's one of those that just when you hear him play it live, you know, they have such emotion behind it.
Yeah.
And just, I think that as I refined my taste, I just appreciate the sheer honesty and genuine performance that you can get from some of these bands. Like,
right.
They're intimate. They're not afraid to let you know how they feel. They're not afraid to let you know their struggles. And they're just, I find myself relating to a lot of it. There's a great track by them as well on their new album. It's called C-Sections and Railway Trestles. And they have another one of those in there. Some of those lines that the first time I heard it, I remember it's at the end of the documentary that they did, which if you haven't seen is great.
Yeah.
It's awesome. And it's after the one brother had his first kid and he wrote this song while they're in there. And it's this whole process of his, what, you know, his son being born. And there's another one of those things. And there's like, life's a series of commas, but just one period, or life is a period with a whole bunch of commas. I think that's what it is. And it's just another one of those things where I remember stopping the car, backing up the song, listening to it again and going, that's really what he said. And there's yeah. just, I have so many of those lines that, man, when I stumbled upon the Avid Brothers, I've been very grateful for it. So.
Yeah. Now, would you say the rest of this album is as intimate and kind of pared down? I only listened to this track.
No. And that's the thing I like about them is that some of their stuff is very, you know, you and like the close up of the camera and he's just singing right to you.
Right.
And then the other ones, they have a song on there called like Kick Drum Heart. And it's just like, my heart is a kick drum. And he's just, and they're just, they rock as much yeah. as a banjo, guitar, cello, and bass can rock, man.
Right. And that's the other thing. What I was like expecting from mm-hmm. this, when you sent me Avid Brothers and I saw, you know, Murder in the City, I was expecting that. And then this song came on. And that was like not what I was expecting.
No, and it's but the whole album kind of goes up and down, and it's so. That's what I think I like about them so much is that they have stuff that moves and cranks. It goes a lot faster, gets you more energetic, and then they can hit you in the feel spot with things like this. And I love unique instrumentation.
Yeah,
you know,
well, and they certainly have it,
and they do, and they use it really well. You know, the banjo is. As I know that you are a fan of folks who play the banjo, it can go a bunch of different ways, man.
Right.
And I think between the Avid Brothers and the Bella Fleck coming later is two very different ways to look at how the instrument can be played.
Right.
But still so unique and awesome. It's not just something that it's not that stereotypical instrument that you think of. But like hearing the cello and all these different things, it's fun. And some of their stuff, they got horns going and other things, and they're one of my all time faves at this point in time.
Yeah,
and I was one of the things going on during our time at home. We had tickets to go see them in Philly, and it got rescheduled till next year. So at least it was rescheduled and not canceled.
Yeah, I have a whole bunch of those. So my concert calendar is booked for next year, but I'm sitting at home twiddling my thumbs right now. So.
True, but we can always think of it this way. We've paid for it already.
It's true.
You know, so yeah. That's a bonus.
Yeah.
So someday I'll see them.
You've seen them before, though, right?
Saw them twice so far, but at the end of baseball games.
Right.
They do a thing at Philly where they'll play the concerts at the end of the game.
Yeah.
Which was great because the last time that we saw them, we took the kids. So it was my two kids, who at the time would have been, 7 and 4, were... That was their first major league baseball game.
Yeah, that's cool.
And it was their first concert all at the same time, which was great. And the baseball game, by the way, super quick. You know, major league games sometimes can go really long. This was like 2 hours and 20 minutes of a game. It was crazy. And it was great because the kids had a wonderful time. It was a beautiful day. The music was good. We could move. It was a great experience. And Philly's a good place to see a baseball game. So
Yeah, I can attest to that as well.
Yeah, we'll see if they actually get some games in.
Well, here's hoping.
Here's the hoping.
Okay, so let's keep moving on, and we'll go to my first pick, and the song is Victory Dance by My Morning Jacket. Now, have you heard My Morning Jacket at all before this?
I had heard them. I think I have a couple of early albums. And so what I did was I listened to everything, and I jotted some things down. But then I didn't dig too far. You know what I mean? Because I want to, because My Morning Jacket seems like one of those bands that every time I hear a song by them, I go, why don't I listen to them more?
Right.
And then I just it never finds its way in, or I listen to it for like a week. But I'm pretty sure I have a couple of older recordings of theirs. So I don't know much about this recording itself.
This is not terribly old, but they've done maybe two albums since this one. So I'm going to say this is maybe 2013, 2014 or so, if I were to guess. I mean, I picked it because they somewhat fall in that folk category, but they're a little bit more indie, and they could be a little bit harder, more driving rock. And I thought maybe it was a little bit on the fringe of, you know, what you like, and kind of pull you in.
No, it did, and I enjoyed it. Like, as I was listening to it for the first time, I remember just thinking how much I liked how it built, because it just starts with that bass and just the background noise, and then it kind of continued to layers. And I think guitars didn't hit till like 3 minutes in or something like that.
Yeah,
and it was really like, I appreciate that and the build and how it went. And it was a funny thing is because I do find myself being more of a lyric guy.
Yeah.
I think that comes with our background instrumentally.
Right.
You know what I mean?
You're more of a choral guy.
Right. So I listen to the singer and what they can do. And then I usually go to guitar strums and bass lines.
Yeah.
I try to be the world's worst air drummer. you know, but I think that I don't even know how much I listened to a lot of the lyrics. Like, I know I got the victory dance part pretty quickly, but it was just, it was a neat, the simplicity of the bass line that was going through and just the repetitive nature of it. And as it kept building and building and building, and it kind of felt like the song itself wanted to, like, they did a really great job of holding it back for a while. And then just kind of like the floodgates open when those guitars hit, and the whole thing just kind of, you know, it managed to build interest without ever speeding up, you know,
right,
and just playing with layers,
right,
and dynamics and stuff like that, which is always interesting to me.
Yeah, except for the very end where it does speed up pretty significantly,
right,
and it's almost like this rush towards the end.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and I think Jim James, he's the lead singer. I think he has like an interesting voice. It's almost a little nasally. He gets up pretty high most of the time, not quite falsetto, but kind of, I would say he's a tenor for sure. Yeah. And, I think it's just unique. And, funny thing is, it took me a little while to get into My Morning Jacket. Like, I'd been hearing about them, and kind of like you, like, I'd listen once and then be like, oh, this is pretty good. And then kind of get away from them. And, but over time I've grown to really enjoy their stuff, and to the point where now, you know, they put out an album and I'm there and I'm listening to it.
Yeah. No, that's, it's interesting to me because I think sometimes I have to listen to something a number of times. I think I determined somewhere in college, actually with I think what I said was my next song, it took me 4 times to get into it.
Yeah.
And the buddy of mine who gave it to me was like, look, you're going to listen to this album 4 times, and after the 4th time, we'll talk. Because you're going to have the first time where you're just listening going, what am I listening to?
Right.
And then the second time you'll go, okay. And by the 3rd and 4th times, you're really going to dig in and get it. And I was like, all right. And I remember listening to it 4 times and going, yeah, that's about right. Like about four listens is when I think I can make an honest opinion across the board. Because it's not just like a gut feeling, and I can, you know, we've trained and studied in music, and I don't have that brain like some of my friends do where they can't turn it off. I am really able to turn it off and just sit back and listen. But hearing something, I do like to listen to it a bunch of times before I make an honest judgment on it.
Yeah.
whether or not it goes into recordings. And I just think, I don't think I've ever gotten there fully with my morning jacket, not because I don't like it,
right,
but because I usually somewhere around two listenings to something, then usually there's a screaming child, or there's a thing that's got to happen, or something broke, or, you know, something like that. So it's one of those things where they're definitely a band that I want to listen to more. And I think, didn't they just put something new out?
Yeah, just within the last maybe week or two, they just put out a new album, The
that
Waterfall
sounds like something
2.
I'm going to add to my Spotify list here in a minute.
So. Yeah, yeah, definitely. So the album before that was The Waterfall, really good album. And then now they just put out The Waterfall 2, which I think is supposed to be kind of considered a continuation, kind of
so
sonically the same.
First.
Yeah, I would probably do that.
Do you ever love, don't you love, maybe I should rephrase it this way, don't you enjoy when you get into a band that's been around for a while,
and
then you look at their back catalog and you go,
going back.
Oh,
yeah.
But on some levels, I do think that, I think that for some bands, that's intimidating. Like,
it could be.
If you're, well, if you're new to Dave Matthews,
yeah,
and you go on Spotify, you're going to cry because they list all the live albums and all
right.
the recordings and stuff.
Right.
Like, there's so much to sift through that you almost need somebody to just say, tell me what you like. Here's where you should go.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and that's where some of the algorithms, I think, are helpful.
Yeah, for sure.
But I do love, man, when you get there and you're like, man, I really enjoy this. And then you turn around and you go back and it's like, see all albums. And you're like, there's so much music to listen to here.
Yeah,
I'm
absolutely.
So excited.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm going to be that way when I get into my morning jacket, where I'm just going to be like,
yeah.
All right. Oh my gosh, there's so much here and I'm going to love all of it.
Yeah, I think so too.
Most of it, at least.
Even I don't think I've even gotten all the way back to like the real early stuff.
Cuz the real early stuff is far more folky.
I think
right?
more folky than anything, yeah.
Well, like Fleet Foxes, for some reason in my mind,
yeah.
they tend to they're not the same, and was the other one, not quite Vampire Weekend, but like some I think a lot of them got popularish around the same time.
Yeah, yeah, like so, Mumford and Sons and
yeah.
That whole crew. What was that? Maybe about 2007 or so,
somewhere. Because it was a Grammy performance. Because I used to show it to my students because it was Mumford and Sons, Avett Brothers, and Bob Dylan.
Oh,
did
yeah.
this thing on the Grammys, and it was just because Mumford and Sons used a piccolo trumpet during one of their things. So we were talking about different instruments and different
okay.
sounds,
and
it was this cool live performance. Like microphones fall over in the it was great. And then at the very end, they all do Maggie's Farm with Bob Dylan.
Oh, that's cool.
And you want to talk about unique voices?
Yeah, for sure.
Bob Dylan's a pretty polarizing cat that way.
Yeah, I saw him once at a festival. He was playing, and I was just like, well, I got to see Bob Dylan to say I've seen Bob Dylan. And
yeah.
I made it about two songs, and I was like, all right, well, I could say I've seen him, but that was enough for me. And especially because,
yeah.
you know, he was already old at that point. And
yeah.
any of his youthful whatever that he had at one point,
some
people
his...
can maintain that as they get older, and others cannot.
Yeah.
And
yeah. His like Highway 61 Revisited, Blood on the Tracks era, that stuff is brilliant and something that I can listen to. But I'm with you, man. There's sometimes
yeah.
when there's a couple of Dylan tunes where I'm like, you know what I like? Jimi Hendrix's version of this song.
right.
You know, or I
yes.
love the cover of this tune rather than the original.
Yeah. Well, I think there's no denying Bob Dylan is a master songwriter, and I think he's a much better songwriter than he is
best ever.
A performer.
Yeah. I think everyone can appreciate his songwriting. I think his performances are an acquired taste.
I would agree with that for sure.
Yeah. But no, it's just it's been interesting to say the least.
All right. So I don't know how we got there, but let's keep moving
we
on.
We could probably track it back if we wanted to, but it's more fun to just ignore it.
Sure. So there's no good segue, so let's just move right on.
Oh, I got a segue for you. Speaking
okay.
of unique voices and acquired taste, let's talk a little bit about Radiohead.
Yeah. I do think it is an acquired taste. I think it was an acquired taste for me.
Okay.
So let's introduce. The song is Paranoid Android by Radiohead. And this is from the album OK Computer, which is my second favorite Radiohead album.
Ooh, what's your first favorite Radiohead album?
In Rainbows.
Okay, that's fine. You know what?
Yeah.
I can't argue with that because if I had to choose something that would be better than OK Computer, I could. There's a solid argument for In Rainbows. Before we get into the song, have you heard the story and the playlist? The about the 0, 1, and 10? 0, 1, and 10? The urban legend?
No.
Oh, Mr. Ennis. Okay.
Maybe you may have tried to explain it to me.
I think I
once
did.
Before when we talked about Radiohead. But why don't you refresh my memory here?
So the rumor is that they basically had the ideas for In Rainbows while they were doing OK Computer. And if you put the songs back to back in order, like track one from OK Computer, which I think is Airbag, and then track one from In Rainbows, which is 15. Is it 15?
15 step is for.
And then you go to track two and track two, but you set your crossfade on your player at 10 seconds, and it merges into one seamless recording that all goes back and forth. I have a playlist. I'll share it with you when we're done.
Now, has that been confirmed?
Because you know what? If you go on, and I'm going to find it here because we have the internet, because that's how we're doing this right now. There is a version on Radiohead's Spotify list where it says it's OK Computer, OK Not OK, 1997, 2017.
Yeah.
It's a remastered version.
Right.
But I thought there's actually a list somewhere that they put out where it's this is what it all is together. I could be completely wrong.
Interesting.
But you know what? I don't care because it's a non-harmful conspiracy theory.
Right.
But putting them together, it makes a pretty neat album when you hear it all together. But
I will have to try that for sure.
OK Computer is the first one that got me into Radiohead. Like I had heard Creep.
Yeah.
I mean,
me
everyone
too.
Had kind of heard Creep.
Right.
But that was the record that my neighbor Ben McClure, shout out Millersville, Landisall. Where he said, you got to listen to this. And I remember him coming over and handing me the record. And I listened to it like four times. And then I've been hooked ever since.
For me, they were playing at Bonnaroo back in 2005 when I was going. And I hadn't really listened to them, but they were headlining. And I was thinking, this would probably be a good time. I should check them out. Mm-hmm. Maybe listen a little bit before I go see them and see what this is all about. And so a friend was like, you should probably start with OK Computer. And I was like, all right, let's see what this is all about. So that was, OK Computer is probably the album that got me initially hooked. And then In Rainbows was not out yet at the time of that concert, but it was like about to come out. And so they basically debuted most of that album at that show.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be great.
Which is maybe why that's my favorite album. Like that's my first real getting into them experience.
Mm-hmm. See, because a lot of the folks that is not a lot, but some of the folks that I'll talk to would actually argue that they think the Bends is the best. I think you can make a solid argument, regardless of where you fall in Radiohead fandom, that the Bends is really where it starts. Pablo Honey's great. There's a couple of tracks on there that are good.
But really more just like straight up alternative rock.
Right. And the Bends is where they start to
experiment.
They start to do stuff and they experiment more lyrically. It gets a little bit interesting. That was back when music videos mattered.
Right.
Some of the music videos from the Bends are just mind-bendingly awesome. But OK Computer was that first one where I listened to the whole thing and I just was like, oh my gosh, what am I listening to? And this song, Paranoid Android, man, if I could learn one Radiohead song on the guitar, this would be it.
Yeah. Well, the problem is it's so complex. It's not one where you could just sit down and be like, all right, G chord and then a D chord and then, and you're good. Like it's so, the chords they use are complex. They change it at weird times. It's, the mixed meter and, the 7/8, everything combined just makes it so complex and unique. And it doesn't really fit in to any other category either.
No. And it's like three songs crammed into one.
It's
definitely, if you ever taught movements in, we talk about Beethoven and the first movement of the Fifth Symphony. You talk about this idea, and is it really fate knocking on his door? And you get into Radiohead, and you could say, like, here's three movements in 1 6-minute song.
Right.
And it's just how they go about that. And the thing about, to me, is that there's no other song like that on OK Computer. It's just so unique that that whole album. It's actually the first record that I purchased, like if we don't go back to like the Young MC, the first CD,
right.
The first record that I bought for my new record collection was OK Computer. It was not cheap, but I'm proud of the purchase.
I have OK Computer on vinyl myself.
It's so heavy. That was the thing I realized between the new vinyl and old vinyl. It's so heavy.
Yeah. What is it, the 180 gram, I think?
180 gram.
Yeah. Oh, but it's I mean, I've heard, and I don't remember where I heard this, but somebody had said, or I read it somewhere, that Radiohead like plays like John Coltrane records when they go into the studio, like before they go and start doing their own thing for like inspiration. And when you think about that, I could definitely pick out a lot of that jazz influence in what they're doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, in no way would I consider what they played jazz, but there are definite jazz influences, you know, with some of the chords they use and some of the, you know, compositional aspects of it.
Yeah, it doesn't move where you think it should move. You know, we become very inundated to like 1-4-5-1, occasional minor six tossed in there, and they can do that. But I think that they wield that part of the repertoire carefully, and they're really willing to push. And then, I mean, after OK Computer came Kid A and Amnesiac, and they got so very different. I just adore so much of their stuff. There's one of those bands that anytime they come around, we get tickets and go.
Yeah.
Just because I saw them in Philly, the last time they were through in Philly, and it was so good. They're just such good performers at this point of their career, too. They're so unique. And Thom Yorke has got a different voice, and I'm sure that people will go, how do you guys not like Bob Dylan, but you like Thom Yorke?
Yeah, it's a little different. I have to say, he is hard to understand a lot of the time.
Yeah, maybe that's why it took me four times to get through it, so I could actually understand the words. And to this day, I'll put on, you know, the lyrics now pop up on some of the players, and I'm like, oh, really?
Oh. Yeah.
All right, cool.
Yeah, right.
I didn't know that. Maybe I shouldn't say that anymore. But they're so many of their records are just so different and so good. Even the ones that I'm not a huge fan of, like I don't love King of Limbs. I'll still listen to it.
You know,
it pops up on stuff. I'm still going to sit down and listen to it. What's the last one? A heart-shaped pool? Moon-shaped pool?
Moon-shaped pool, I think. I listen to that maybe twice. It's okay.
No, yeah, it's fine. Like, and I like it. There's other like some of the stuff I've seen there's a video somewhere of just Thom Yorke and Johnny Greenwood, the guitarist, playing just the two of them, one of the tracks from that. I was like, that's really good. Yeah. It's one of those things where like I think certain albums translate better live than they do in studio recordings.
Yeah.
And I think that some of the tracks I heard from that, I heard the last time they were through Philly, it does really well live.
Yeah. But I think that's where OK Computer and In Rainbow Shine, it's that they're like studio masterpieces. They flow so well, the production's done, and you know, there isn't any track that you skip. You just play it. Start at the beginning, play it through, and you know, on both of those.
Yeah, no, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Can't go wrong with Radiohead.
Well, speaking of unique, we'll go on to the next song, which I think is also unique, and the song is Next by Bela Fleck and the Flecktones.
Okay. What in the wide world of sports were they saying? Because I couldn't pick it up well enough, and I didn't go back and like isolate, but like there was definitely something being said in one of the layers, and I was like, what are they saying?
I have no idea.
Cool.
Yeah.
Oh man, Bella, this was another one of those, because he was supposed to be around for Burke's Jazz Fest this year.
Yep, I got tickets, so I will be going next year.
So I want to see that, because that was my question. What iteration of Bela Fleck and the Flecktones was this? Because they changed it. Like, the original lineup was him and Victor Wooten and...
And Future Man.
Future Man, who's a Wooten, right?
Right. He's, yes. It's Victor's brother. Older brother, yep.
And then...
And then
I stopped knowing names.
Right. And then Howard Levy is... I think he was around early, but maybe not originally. But he was around early on. And he was, like, piano, and he's a... like crazy good harmonica player, harp player. Okay. And so that's actually now the current iteration of the Flecktones is the four of them.
Okay.
But this particular song is the iteration where Howard was out and Jeff Coffin was in.
Right. Okay. And Coffin's the guy who now plays sax for Dave Matthews.
Dave Matthews. Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, because I wasn't sure. And this is the one that also has, there were tablas in this one, right?
Yeah. They just throw, it's like, what are all these unique instruments that we could just layer on top and just throw in there and make it sound unique? I mean, there's tabla, they've used theremin, they've used, mm-hmm. Their one live concert, they have a bassoon player who's putting things through like effects.
I think we got that concert from you guys, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, because I think your wife sent it to us. I don't know. Anyway. Yeah. But like that's tabla player is this guy, right? The
Yes.
And like
by the way, that tabla player came to Millersville while we were there and did a concert.
Seriously?
Yeah. Dan Heslin got him there. And so we went to like a tabla concert and he was like incredible.
Hey, what are you guys doing tonight, man? Tabla concert.
Yeah.
No, did you mean tapas? No, tabla. You know what? Never mind. Just go. And this is when we talk about finding things in styles of music. I appreciate and love things done at a high level.
Yeah.
I don't care what the genre is, but anybody who's a fan of music can listen to this and go, wow, they're so good at what they do. You might not like it, and that's fine. But they are so good at what they do. Yeah. I've never heard a banjo player play like him. He's a guy that when we look back and folks who like define and then redefine instruments in this day and age, like Bela Fleck to me redefines what you can do on a banjo. I'm a big fan of Jake Shimbukuro, the ukulele player.
Ukulele,
who completely redefines what you can do with instruments like that. You hear it with guitarists all the time, people just pushing the envelope, what you can do, what you can't do.
Right.
And Victor Wooten on the bass, that was the other thing I wrote down here, was like, he's so good, there's parts that were if you didn't know that he was the bass and he was playing, you wouldn't know it was the bass. It's so melodic.
He's not playing it like a bass.
No. Right. He doesn't think of it as that lower support, he thinks of it as its own unique melodic instrument, and he interweaves so well with Bela Fleck and what they're doing. It's so good. And like just the musician in me who has practiced a couple of these instruments here or there.
Right.
Is like, how do you do that?
Yeah.
The thought process and knowing that so much of their stuff is improvised.
Yes.
Like, how do you think like that? I think I have a recording of Bela Fleck doing Bach.
Yes.
Doesn't he do the cello concertos?
He has a whole album of classical music on the banjo.
That's so good.
Yeah.
He's just so good. Yeah. And then he plays like an electric banjo.
Electric banjo.
It makes me want to practice 12 hours a day or quit. There's really no in-betweens with that.
Yeah. Well, Bela is...
I loved...
He's probably one of my favorite just overall musicians. Not like my favorite banjo player, not like my favorite bluegrass, but like my favorite musicians, period. Like... Just overall, the way he crafts his solos, that you know how melodic it is, but then he'll like do this like chromatic stuff to get out of it, and then it just lands perfectly. You could like kind of hear where he's going, and then he lands there, and it's so good.
And it's so crisp, and it's so clean.
Yeah,
I remember watching that concert, that live concert where the tabla player's there,
right?
And they zoom sometimes in on his hands, and there's no wasted movement.
Right.
There's nothing. And it's all so small and so precise that I'm just in awe of what he can do. And this recording was awesome. When I saw this pop up on the list, I was like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
Because it was so good. And I have their Christmas album. Do you have their Christmas album?
Oh, that's one of my favorite Christmas albums.
The throat singing? Jingle bells.
Yeah.
It's great. Like, but again, it's like,
it's the most unique Christmas album you'll ever hear. Yeah.
And who wakes up one day and says, you know what we're going to do today, guys? We're going to get a Mongolian throat singer in here and we're going to play Jingle Bells.
Yeah.
Or in this record, like you said, the bassoon player with the effects pedal, the guy playing the pan flute, the guy, you know, this person over here, a future man with the drumitar. Like, who just wakes up and says, you know what we're going to do? Whatever we want. And it's going to be amazing.
Right.
And they're right.
Well, and we should probably talk about that. For anybody who is not aware, they really don't have a drum set player
Future Man plays an instrument he invented called the drumitar, which basically puts all the sounds at his fingertips, and it's almost like he's playing a funky guitar, but it's like all MIDI sounds.
Right. The best thing to describe what it looks like, because I'm looking at one right now, not a drumitar, but I'm looking at it, a Guitar Hero guitar.
Yeah.
It looks like someone, this, and he did this well before Guitar Hero was a thing.
Did this like in the 80s.
And he made this thing, and he can do, when we talk about drummers, the best drummers can do polyrhythmic stuff in like all four limbs.
Right.
You know, your boy Carter Beauford can keep things going on in each limb.
Yeah.
Really good drummers can do three. You know, adequate drummers can do two. I can do a half. you know, but like he, with the ability to use all fingers, he expands what you're able to do. And it's...
Yes, because now he has 10 appendages instead of four.
Right. Yeah. And he uses a lot of them. And to keep it all straight is just... It's so neat. It's just neat. Yeah. It's such a recommendation for people to listen to.
Yeah. Well, and I will say, I once saw a Future Man play a regular drum set, and it was kind of weird to see him do it. But he was good. He was very good.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
But, like, it's just, it's nuts.
Yeah.
That would be like saying, I saw Victor Wooten play a four-string bass. Like, does he ever really? I
mean, how many does he play four-string? He does play four. Okay. I've seen him play with his brothers, and one of his brothers had, like, a 8 or 10 string bass.
Oh my gosh.
It was like insane. Yeah.
I can't do that. My hands aren't strong enough, man. Like it's nuts.
That whole family is ridiculous.
It's all like the Marsalis family, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Good for
them. I think Victor was maybe like the youngest or one of the youngest. So they already had like a family band before he even came. And then they just like threw a bass at him and were like, here you go. And then the older brothers basically taught him.
That's like Jimmy Vaughn teaching Stevie Ray Vaughan how to play the guitar.
Yeah.
It was both a wonderful idea and a who knew he was going to be that much better than you kind of a thing.
Yeah. But yeah, with the Flecktones, it's just so unique, and just the combination of instruments and the timbre that you get from having a banjo mixed with a saxophone mixed with an electric bass, and then, you know, all the crazy sounds that you can have on a drumitar because you've programmed tiny little bells and more than what you can have on a standard set. It's just
it was so good.
The Flecktones have consistently been on like my top five list since I first started listening to them.
I would agree. They're so good, and they're one of those groups that I find myself like, you just go down a huge rabbit hole, and next thing you know it's been hours. And there was this thing I remember, maybe I'm wrong, but they kind of pride themselves on no concert is the same. If you see them on Tuesday, if you see them on Tuesday and you have tickets to see them on Thursday, it's a different concert.
When I was younger and could do this, I went to two nights in a row. I went like in Easton, I think they had a show. And then the next night they were playing down in like Baltimore or something. So I went to both. And two nights in a row, but not the same concert at all. You know, mixed up their songs, and even if they played the same song, it did not sound the way it just sounded last night.
Right. Different solos, different everything. Yeah.
Right. Right. So I cannot recommend the Flecktones enough. Again, maybe you won't like it, but you at the very least have to appreciate the level of musicianship.
No, I'd agree with that. They're just tremendous.
So going on, talking of musicianship, I think is a great example. Ben Folds 5, the song is Selfless, Cold, and Composed.
Oh, man. What did you think? Now, are you a Ben Folds guy?
I am. I've seen him quite a few times, and I had this album probably back in high school or, whenever. Right. So I was familiar with the song and the album and Ben Folds for sure. I've seen him solo, just him and a piano. I've seen him with a band. I'm not sure it was Ben Folds 5, but it was with, drums and bass and maybe guitar.
Yeah, he did a tour off his first album where it was him and a different bass player and a different drummer.
Right. So I've seen that. And then I saw him play with the Philly Orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
In fact,
concert? Were we at that concert together?
No, I saw Neil Lutz there, though.
I saw him at a different one. We saw him when he played at the outdoor venue in Philly.
Oh, okay. The man?
Yeah, with Yeah, the man. He did the man with the orchestra at one point. We saw him there too. I've seen him a bunch too.
Right. Yeah.
He's,
No,
I've seen him in concert more than anybody.
Yeah, I saw him at the Kimmel Center with the orchestra.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah. So anyway, I am very familiar and I know the song fairly well. So it was not new to me, but it was enjoyable because I don't think I've listened to this in a long time. I've listened to Ben Folds pretty much, but not. I find myself listening to more of his solo stuff than the Ben Folds Five stuff.
That's fair. I think that the reason I was kind of compiling my list, a lot of these are the songs that either got me into a band or confirmed my love of a band.
Right.
And I think that it was this one or Smoke, frankly, from that album.
And I
could choose just about any track off that album, not for this podcast, because there are some, parental warnings are there for a reason.
And I think everybody knows Brick from this album. Or if you know Ben Folds, you know Brick.
If you know one Ben Folds Five song, it's probably Brick. Yeah. And I remember, so I saw him back in the day. I saw him at the Electric Factory a few times.
Okay.
And we saw him once before Brick was out. And the second time we saw him at the Electric Factory was after Brick had been released.
Yeah.
So there was the population in the concert was very different.
I'm sure.
There was a lot more teenage and young and girls than we had assumed would be at a concert. But one of those two shows, Train, opened for Ben Folds Five.
Really?
And they did a killer cover of Ramble On by Zeppelin. And they were really good.
Yeah.
Like, and my favorite part about that, because that was right as Meet Virginia was starting to hit.
Oh, yeah.
So it shows you how old this is. But that was the first song they played. It was like the second song they played. And they just got it out of the way. And everyone loved it. And then they could focus on playing other stuff. It was great.
Right.
But we, as somebody who's a terrible piano player, I love listening to Ben Folds play the piano.
Yeah. I'm in the same boat.
And he's I love the stories and the songs. This goes back to the whole, like, I love music that tells stories.
Yeah, he's a great songwriter.
Such a great songwriter.
You know, like we were talking about with Bob Dylan. I mean, you know, so many are just gems and lyrically good, but even musically, as far as, you know, composing.
So well constructed and the whole classical stuff he did. Ben Folds Five stuff, this is my favorite Ben Folds Five album.
Yeah, I would agree.
A lot of folks will talk about Reinhold Messner. I actually, talking about albums that I think do better live, Reinhold Messner, I saw after it was released, they played it at Franklin and Marshall. And I saw that concert, and they played a ton of Reinhold Messner. And live, it was great. I don't love it as much on the CD. I'll still listen to it, don't get me wrong. But live, it was great. And then from there, like, actually, the album that I really like a lot of, like, that I think does a great job is Ben Folds Live.
Yes.
Because it does a lot of his early solo stuff with the best stuff from Ben Folds 5.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, that's where my wedding song came from. We did The Luckiest as our my song with my wife. And that's the version we used from Ben Folds Live.
Yeah, I used Zach and Sarah from that for about two or three podcasts ago. I had that on my playlist.
It's so good. I think I had one of them as my ringtone for a while. Actually, The Luckiest is still the ringtone for my wife.
We have actually a big, like, printout frame-up of The Luckiest in our music room downstairs, like, of just, you know, one line of the music, but...
Is it the one with the piano, with the picture that he took?
No.
So Ben Folds, I actually own a piece of one of his photos.
Yeah,
Of the music of The Luckiest and his signature on it.
Every year I see that come up, and every year I'm like, I should get that.
It's around, I don't think, we haven't framed it yet.
Yeah.
I'm looking around. We've got other concert posters. Our concert poster collection is not nearly as good as yours. But but by the way, because I've definitely come around to the fact that concert posters better than t-shirts.
Yeah.
Because I can frame them and they look like art and I don't have to wash them.
Yep. And you're not going to grow out of them, or they're not going to shrink, or...
Correct. And I can put them up at school.
Yep.
I can't wear my t-shirts to school all the time.
Right.
So, no, but this song to me, there's something about this one where it has that kind of jazzy feel to it.
Yeah, I have that written in. In fact, I have that, the instrumental part of it sounds like Vince Guaraldi.
Mm.
Peanuts stuff.
Yeah, I can hear that. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But it's just, it's such a, that album is so... what do they call it? Punk rock for sissies. Like they just, because it's a 3-piece band and you don't expect them. And I love the fact that they call themselves the Ben Folds Five because it sounds better than Ben Folds Three.
Right.
Like they're just, there's something about, they're very irreverent. And some of the songs, like you're expecting something and then you hear it and you're like, wait, what did they just say?
Yeah. And I've, in my notes, very musical for a 90s alternative rock group.
Yeah. Their musicianship was so beyond so many other groups at the time.
Right.
All of them, Darren Jesse and Robert Sledge, like they're all so very good at what they do.
Yeah.
And they complement each other really well. And I've seen every iteration that he's been around. I've been him in the piano, him in a different band, him in Ben Folds Five, him in the orchestra, and they're all great. And he's another one of those where if he's around, I want to go see him in concert.
Yeah.
And he's so good in concert.
Yeah.
Is he still doing the Saturday night things right now from his apartment in Australia?
Yeah. He got stuck because of COVID.
He got stuck in Australia.
So he just got an apartment. He's like, well, I'm just going to start streaming live stuff weekly. And,
just for fun. I'll take requests, write songs.
Right. Yeah.
He's just.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he has seemingly a passion to kind of pass on and teach kids.
Oh, he was going to be
a music ed major, wasn't he?
Yeah. He's an advocate for the arts for sure. I mean, he's part of the board for one of the, National Endowment for the Arts or something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
He's a board member on that. And I mean, every time I've seen him, he's made a point to give a little speech advocating for the arts and music programs and orchestras.
And he was a judge.
Yeah.
On the only singing competition show that I love dearly.
Yes. Yes.
The Sing-Off.
That came up when I talked about this in when I had Zach and Sarah a couple podcasts ago, and we talked about that. And often on those judging shows, the judges don't really know what they're talking about, music.
Agreed.
You know, they use terms like, well, that was pitchy, or no, I didn't like that, or whatever. Mm-hmm. But Ben Folds, when he was a judge, he would use musical terms. He would use, and then use it when he got to the dominant, and then you were a little bit sharp there, and he was actually speaking in musical terms, like he knew what he was talking
musicians.
About.
Yes. It was weird. Well, and then that was, so the two things that came out of that show were also the fact that my wife developed a serious love for Sarah Bareilles, and so did I. And
that's right. She Pentatonix. Was a judge on that too.
She was a judge on there too.
Yeah.
And the Pentatonix, that's where they got their start from. And all of that stuff. It was a wonderful little musical nest egg. And
it was. I mean, there were other really good groups on there as well.
Yeah, Home Free. Home Free was one, the country based one, and they were really good.
Yeah.
There's a ton of great a cappella groups there.
Yeah.
And it was awesome. And it was one of those shows where, I mean, I'll admit that the family now watches The Masked Singer because my kids love it, my wife likes it, and I'm like, okay, sure.
Yeah.
And some of it's been really fun and really enjoyable, but it's a different kind of experience.
Yeah.
You know, as it goes back to that whole guilty pleasure thing. I like it. It's fun. Not everything needs to be serious, and that's a fun time. But I miss the Sing-Off. That's one where I wish
we
could have stuck around a few more years.
Yeah, they should bring that back.
Yeah,
Of along those lines, have you heard the Ben Folds album where it's all a cappella groups?
Absolutely.
Singing Ben Folds songs.
Randomly, it still comes up on my car. So like my car has that setting where it will start to play music on my phone.
Yeah.
I don't know how I have it saved on my phone. I'm like, I'm a techie guy.
Yeah.
And I'll be driving and I'll turn on my car, and if the Bluetooth kicks up and if I don't have something else queued up,
yeah,
like that and them Crooked Vultures are the two things that randomly pop up, and I have no idea where did I save it,
right?
And I can't delete it because it's not that I don't like it, but I heard like these two tracks all of the time, and I'm like, how did I mess this up?
Right.
So it just makes me chuckle.
Yeah.
It's time to reset the phone. I think that's really what it means.
We're going to pause that conversation right there for this week, and next week you can hear the rest of our conversation. We continue our deep dive into some interesting music picks next week, so you will not want to miss it. Tune in next week for part 2 with Mr. Mazurek. And remember, be kind to each other. Class is dismissed.